I've had the good fortune to interview you so many times over the years. You've had a fabulous career over 25 years. And was there a question that I haven't asked you? And one came to mind. What drives Gay Waterhouse? What motivates her?
I think that I enjoy what I do very much, Ray. I've been born and bred into racing. The things that drive me now may be different to what it was when I first started. But I love the people I work with, and it's very much like a family. And I enjoy meeting the different people I meet through being owners. I enjoy the doors that it opens and where you can go anywhere in the world. And, you know, from the Queen of England to, you know, the Prime Minister of Australia, everyone wants to know about racing. So it's a very equal turf we're on.
Yeah, you said something there about enjoyment, and you always seem to enjoy a win, Gay. It doesn't matter if it's a provincial maiden or a Group One, you enjoy that interaction you have with your owners.
Very important. I have a large number of owners I train for. We're very much a public stable and always have been. And it's really, they become great friends, the owners. You know, they meet through either syndication or just coming into the stable and buying a share in a horse. And they're there, you know, every Sunday to see their horse. And they get to know the people in the stables, and they get to know me and I them. And it becomes really like a family. It's really nice. It's a very nice extension of one's life.
If I can take you back to 1992, and that was the year you finally got your trainer's license, what were your ambitions back then about your training career?
Well, I wanted to be successful. Mm. I didn't want to disappoint my father in any possible way. And I knew that unless I was instantly successful, that people wouldn't support me. Because a lot of other trainers, getting their licenses before me, and they probably were much more attractive for owners to give their horses to. So I just was absolutely focused on making sure that I made a success of my, you know, my start in my career. Dad was a great mentor and a great trainer and a great father. And, you know, he would say things to me, you know, like say them very directly, Ray, as you know, knowing TJ as you did. And so you'd have to catch, you know, he'd be quite critical sometimes of me, but it was probably good. I think it was very good.
Did you guys clash at all?
We had many clashes.
Clash of wills?
No, well, you know, I adored Dad, and he adored me. But I became, you know, I suppose I like a lot of young people, I became quite willful. I thought I could do it my way. But as Dad said to me, he said, "You can't train these two-year-olds." He said, "You've got no idea." And I said, "Oh, you brush break them down." He said, "Well, I've won 6 Golden Slippers and, you know, all these other races. He used to call himself a man. He said, "A man must be doing something right." And it wasn't until Dad passed away that I thought, how stupid am I, you know, to think I've been there living with him and not learning from him in that department, which he was so brilliant at. And I just thought, I'm just going to just throw away any of the stupid ideas I've got on training two-year-olds and just take the leaves out of his book.
What is it about the Golden Slipper that for you makes that race so special?
It's the best race in Australia. It's the best race in the world. It's the stallion making race of Australasia. You know, you see horses sold for $20, $30, $40 million. Where else in the world are horses? There's Vancouver, you know. Outstanding individual. Absolutely outstanding.
You bought him for $150,000, by memory, Gay, the Magic Means?
Something like that.
And turned him into a $40 million colt.
Well, that's my job.
You know, job well done.
That's how I see it. I see it that, you know, my job is to make these stallions. And I love training. I love training all ages. People say, oh, do you like training the two-year-olds? Do you like training the older horses? I like training all of them because it's like having a family, you know, that you don't want all teeny boppers. You know, it's nice to have a real mixture of age groups.
I think all the years I've known you, I've never seen you upset except one occasion. That was in the late 90s, and you were accepting an award, and you made an impassioned plea for your husband Rob to finally return to the racetrack. How can you describe those days when you didn't have an immediate opportunity to share that success with your husband?
Very difficult, you know, and there's enormous pressure on us and enormous, perceptions can be a funny thing, it can be a good thing and a bad thing. And, you know, everything's in the tabloids and all the papers. So, you know, you're living your life under the microscope, and that always is very difficult, and it can make you react different ways. I felt that enough was enough and made that plea. You know, a lot of people thought it was wrong. I felt it was a public stage and should be said.
Well, it sort of worked. I think within 12 months, Rob was back, and it's been an enduring partnership for both of you, hasn't it? I think you were married in 1980, and Rob's now getting to share those successes on the track with you. We know he's a great student of form and an expert of form, but does he get enough recognition for his eye for a racehorse too? Because he's bought a lot of great racehorses for you.
Well, you know, it's so funny. Rob will say, don't ask me to tell you what the racehorse looks like, but he's an astute form student. He's a brilliant person. He's very well read and very well versed in racing and loves racing. You know, he's passionate about it, as I am. And our son Tom, you know, it's really interesting to see. And you know, he studies the form and looks at it in a different way. And it's able to see things in a horse, a tried horse, that he can recommend that I should be buying or my owners should be buying. Mm-hmm. And that's where we've been so successful.
You took over as chairman in Racing New South Wales in 2011. They've been five pretty tumultuous years. What's been the biggest challenge for your board in that period?
Well, look, we came in, a few of us that were selected to join the board, met early in the piece and set a bit of an agenda about the things we wanted to do. And they involved quite a bit of reform. And reform involves change.
It's never easy.
And change is not easy. Mm. People want progress, but they don't really want change. Yeah. So it hasn't been easy. But look, we've had some sweet victories with parity and a few other things which have softened the blow. But we are in the business of trying to modernise the way racing is administered and modernise practices between participants and make it a far more functional operation. So people have got to change with the times. There's more expected of us today by society than perhaps in days gone past in terms of integrity, in terms of animal welfare, etc. Yeah. And we're bringing about that change now. And so it's been tough, but look, very rewarding, and it's come a long way.
The Aaron Park Stud has been in the Mitchell family for nearly half a century.
My brother Arthur and I never questioned what we wanted to do.
We always knew we wanted to be in the breeding industry. It's what we were born and raised to do.
Tabcorp's support of the industry is the number one thing in Australian racing.
Tabcorp's funding ensures that Australian racing is at the pinnacle of the world's best. Racing, to us, is not just about the winner's enclosure.
It's our family's life, and we love it.
Australian grazier, you know the importance of selecting the right parasite treatment for your farm. Osmectin is a great choice that provides you with high quality products at a price that will make you smile. Osmectin Cattle Poron and Osmectin Sheep Drench delivers a range of pack sizes to suit your needs. Buy Osmectin with confidence, knowing that you are supporting Australian owned and made products from International Animal Health, the Australian company.
How did you become a steward, Ray?
It so happened in 1970 that I got married, and all of a sudden the punting bank became the housekeeping money. And
funny how that goes, isn't it, Ray?
There was an opportunity to be a steward in the Western District. I started off part-time for 3 or 4 years, and I dabbled at the end of that, both in gallops and harness racing, the chairman of the Terang Club, they were having a bit of a trouble. There was a bit of a dispute where the local stewards refused to work with the Melbourne stewards, and I finished up doing a little bit of both, 2 or 3 days a week. And then I think the second night I worked at the harness racing. We gave a chap 12 months for what was a pretty ordinary attempt at trying to win a race, and I got offered a job. I declined it then, but John Trek, who'd moved to harness racing, he spoke to me some months later, and I joined the Victorian Trotting Control Board, as it was in those days.
I think I read once where you said probably the most humorous day you had as a steward happened in your time in Queensland at Caloundra, I think.
It's funny that you say that, because it played out on Sky Channel.
Live?
Yeah. Cameron George, who was with me at the time as a cadet steward, and he's now the chief executive over the Auckland Race Club, and we lined up, and the starter rang me, and he said, the ambulance isn't here for the last race. So
you can't run the race, obviously. Yeah.
I had Cameron running all over the track. I thought he's gone for afternoon tea. We could see the ambulance was down the front of us.
Oh, so it's still on track, the ambulance.
Yes. So we'd gone past time for the last. So the cameras are following every move, myself and Cameron. And we exhausted all possibilities. Where could he possibly be? And I thought, sure to goodness, he's not asleep in the back of the van in the dark glass, and we can't see him. So I ran down, the door's locked, and here I am on Sky, banging on the door, and out he sprung.
He
came from a deep sleep. And anyway, he ran around and got in the front, so back to my stand, and Cameron said to me, he hasn't gone to the start, he's gone out the gate and gone home.
I said, yeah.
He thought when we woke him from asleep that
the meeting was over
and it was time to go. So someone had to jump in a car, follow up the street, and I think 20 minutes later we ran the last race at Caloundra.
Only happened in Queensland, right?
It could, yeah.
Well, Tom, sport's out the door, schoolwork's forgotten about, you're following your dreams. Both of you become apprentice jockeys, and I think it was 2009-10 you secured the Sydney Apprentices Premiership. I know you said you had a slowish start, EI impacted it, but you won that premiership and your star was on the rise. And then along came a chestnut filly with a flaxen mane called Karuta Queen, and suddenly your star was sent into orbit.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing how everything sort of snowballed, and I was very fortunate to win the Sydney Premiership, and got a lot of support from the leading trainers at that stage. And then Karuta Queen, I remember being offered the ride at Goulburn for Neville Late and didn't know whether I was going to take it or not, and the manager told me I had the ride, and seen her at Rose Hill for the first time. She was a little furry bull with a long mane, and she definitely is the horse that put my name in lights and got my career started.
When she was going towards the Magic Man, she was the dominant filly at the time. She had 3 wins very impressively, and she was the hot favourite. You were the teenage apprentice about to ride in a $2 million race. I can remember you doing countless interviews in the days leading up to that race, and you seemed so cool and calm and composed. Were the nerves there?
Not really. Nathan was really good at being able to settle my nerves, and I was probably the same with him. He just always instilled a lot of confidence in me, and I remember him telling me days before the race, and she's the best filly, you're the best rider, which I wasn't by a long way, but that's just what he used to say.
That's why you guys pumped each other up, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, and I went into the race thinking she was unbeatable, and that's pretty much the way I went into it. And every interview I was probably very very bullish about her chances, and she taught me a lot, and not only on a racetrack but off a racetrack, being able to handle media, being able to handle pressure, and giving me confidence as a rider to say I was up to perform with the better jockeys.
And I think she did something else for your career as well. I think Karuta Queen was probably partly responsible for a certain trainer by the name of Gay Waterhouse approaching you to come and ride for her.
Yeah, well, she said to me when she approached me for the job that I saw you ride on Karuta Queen in the Wyong Magic Millions and at the Gold Coast, and I really liked the way you rated the filly in front, and she said, you know my horses, they're always in front, and I need a young rider coming through that can ride very light and can rate a horse well in front, and she said, I can see you can do that, and offered me the job, and it's amazing to see where I am now from riding a favourite in the Magic Millions so long ago.
I can remember you once told me
that you wanted to talk about Nathan. It was your way of keeping his memory alive. Do you still feel that some 2 years after his passing that you're happy to talk about Nathan and his life?
I am. I find it's a little bit harder. Now it's probably sunk in a little bit more that he's not coming back, and that's very hard to talk about. But I still enjoy when other people talk about him more so than myself. It's just good to see that people think about him every day, and they're a part of our everyday life still. So, no, he's definitely never going to be forgotten, and it's so beautiful to see everyone remind me of that every day.
Well, and, of course, you won the first Nathan Berry Medal in 2014. That must have been just an extraordinary moment that day.
Yeah, better than any Group 1 I've ever won, and it was so special to have my mum and dad there on the day, and it was the first time Dad's pretty much really gone to the races and watched me ride on a Saturday. He'd never gone to watch Nathan or I ride on a Saturday. He's always been one of them people that stay at home and watch the races, a bit like John Hawkes, who I've got to know a lot in the last couple of years riding for the Hawkes team. So that's what Dad's like. He likes being at home and being able to watch everything, and it was just special to have him and Mum there on that day to share that moment with.
Nathan came home and passed away, yet a couple of days later you found the inner strength somehow to go out and ride at a major race meeting in Sydney during the Autumn Carnival, the Golden Slipper Day. But you got through that day with the professionalism that you've always shown. But, Tom, how did you cope that day on such a massive stage, knowing that the whole racing world and probably the sporting world's watching you?
Yeah, well, it was a blur to me. I can't remember the day now. Can't even remember what I rode in the slipper that year. It was just the whole day was a blur. Probably looking back on it now, whether I should have rode or not, I'm not too sure, but sort of, and that's probably the whole reason I went to Hong Kong not long after, was just sort of running away from what had happened. But I've got to say, one thing that I did learn was the racing industry is amazing, and what they've done for my family to this date, we could never repay them, and it'll never be forgotten by us, and it just opened my eyes up to how lucky we are to be a part of it.
A couple of weeks later, we mentioned earlier about the Nathan Berry Medal. A couple of weeks later, after his passing, was the Sydney Cup. You won that race on the offer, and I don't think there's been a more emotional moment in my time in racing on a Sydney racetrack after that race. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, but I think everyone was cheering for the offer.
Yeah, it was meant to be, I guess. He's the horse that sort of when Nathan fell sick, I came back for one meeting to ride him, and he won.
Mangan Cup, yeah.
The Mangan Cup, yeah. And so that sort of gave me a bit of hope that we could get Nathan back, and then when he didn't make it, obviously to win on him on this day was very special, and it was a race where sort of coming to the 600, I was shuffled back to near last, and it was never going to happen, but I showed patience that I'd never shown before, and I guess that I felt it was Nathan because he was a very patient rider where I wasn't at that stage. So felt like he was there riding with me, and like I said, it was just how that day planned was something I could never dream of, never explain, and it was very special, and it always will be.
Australian grazier, you know the importance of selecting the right parasite treatment for your farm. Osmectin is a great choice that provides you with high quality products at a price that will make you smile. Osmectin Cattle Poron and Osmectin Sheep Drench delivers a range of pack sizes to suit your needs. Buy Osmectin with confidence, knowing that you are supporting Australian owned and made products from International Animal Health, the Australian company.
Winx has moved up now. Hartnell's hit the front. Winx is going with him, and they've turned it on. Winx has raced away around the home turn. This is a blitz. It's a Winx. It's Global Glamour, Whisper and Crooked Eye in the start. And Global Glamour gives Jay 1,000 guineas.
The Capitalist, the Magic Millions winners, drawn through in the slipper. Capitalist takes it out.
If you love a bet, then we bet you'll love this. We've got a $50,000 Big Six jackpot at Caulfield Boxing Day. So place a bet you'll never forget today. TAB, we love a bet. Gamble responsibly.
The winners keep coming from Sky Racing Tipsters. Mark Guest.
The 150. Young Amazon led the way, but here's Our Rocky unleashing on the outside. It's Our Rocky. Metazoa's getting through and flashing home was Ruthless Angel. It might beat them all. Harry now gets Removal. It's headed down the front and put two lengths on them. Mr. Battered Country tries to run on. It's Removal, though, clear. Mr. Battered Country trying hard. Is closing late, but Removal will deliver.
Sky Racing Tipsters. Finding winners on race day.
Season's greetings from all of us at Sky Racing, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2017.
So things are sailing along pretty well for in the Snowden world, and all of a sudden it gets turned upside down. We're talking 2007, and you get a phone call from Bob Ingham that really did change your life.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, it was a phone call I'll never forget, actually, because
Where were you at the time?
I was at the stables, and I'd been speaking to John that morning, and he said he was going up to head office, and I had no idea. He often went up there for a chat with Bob, yeah. and I had no idea what was going to happen. And about 4 hours after John was there, I got a phone call for Bob to come up the office to see him, and I thought, well, I hope Hawksy hasn't done something.
Have you spoken to John in between?
No, I hadn't, okay. No. Yeah. And when I got up there, he told me what had happened, that John had resigned, and I thought the bottom fell out of my world. I thought, well, I've lost my job, and, you know, what will happen from here? And then he said, well, we're going to offer the job to you. And there again, I couldn't believe what he was saying. It's an opportunity of a lifetime. It's something I never thought I'd be able to achieve. But the support from Bob was unrelenting. It was just full on. He expressed he couldn't put enough emphasis on that he would back me to the hilt, win, lose, or draw. But he wanted me to take over and have a crack. And he said, you need time to think about it. And I said, I shouldn't, but I will. I need to go home and talk to the family, because they don't see me now, so they'll see even less of me when I take over this job. But when I went home and told them about it, they were jumping in the air. And I said, no, you've got to have a crack at this. You've worked so hard. You deserve to have a chance at this job. So with that become a lot of different sort of pressures, because even though I thought I was carrying the burden of a stable running it, it's not the same as when you make the decisions of actually training the horse as well, and where to place them, where to run them, when to work them, not to work them, when to go out to come in. It's a whole new ball game, and I did struggle for a while. There again, didn't delegate, just tried to do what I used to do before and training the horse as well. And I was 9 o'clock at night, still my head in calendars, trying to plan races. And then I realised just I needed to get some help on board to help with different parts, aspects of training. And it took me a while to do it, but I thought if I didn't do it, I'll crack under the pressure of this job. But once I got that extra help, it made things a lot better.
What does the future hold for Peter Snowden?
Looks with Paul beside me, I think we can go a lot further. The amount of ammunition we have at the moment, I think there's a fair bit to look forward to, but it's rewarding, Ray. It's something we love to do and be able to share it between ourselves, which it's a magical moment. And those group ones are very special, but any win is special to have. And as I say, to have your family involved, Lisa's a big part of it now, and Lynn, she's tireless. Actually, in a way, she had a very bad accident, car accident, some 6 years ago, and she struggled for a while, and it was a struggle on the family trying to hold her together and get her better. And I think moving to Sydney, she might not admit it because she's run off her feet, but it's really got a mind active now, and I can see a big difference in her. And she's been really the backbone of my whole success, is her support that I've had from her.
When was that allure of the sport so powerful that James Cummings said, I'm going to follow in my father, grandfather, and great grandfather's footsteps?
There was probably a couple of moments. The first of which was thinking more and more about what I might do when I leave school. But the quiet moments I had in the holidays working with the horses, it just grew on me more and more. And that was, you know, that was before I went to university, but I think it was from there that the fire started to burn inside me. And then there was a series of things that I did and opportunities that I took and experiences that I sort of pursued to try and build up my skill and my experience elsewhere, and work at a horse stud, or work overseas for Sir Patrick Hogan. And it was in the spring of 2008 when I was lucky enough to be down in Melbourne for
Bart's 12th Cup.
That's right, yeah. For Bart's 12th Cup. Mm-hmm. And not just Bart's 12th Cup, but You know, Dad won the Carbine Club that year. He had a couple of nice horses, and he had Turfentine running in the Salinger, and Bart had Schwick. You know, so they quinella'd the race. And you know, outside of just the Melbourne Cup, the Cummings has had a really good carnival, and it really struck me that that's where my passion really lies. And you know, the thrill of the contest. You know, getting the best horses we have, the calibre of horse that can rise to those occasions. And be competitive in that week of all the weeks of the year. That really gripped me, and I knew then that that's what I wanted to do, and I knew then that that's when it would be the right time to give Bart a call and say, you know, I want to learn from you. I want to learn from the best.
I know it still haunts you to this day. It's 1982.
You said you weren't going to mention that.
I've got to bring it up, you know. Now, can we set the record straight once and for all? I know people are always driving you mad about this. Did you go too early?
You know what? I ran into a bloke. I was walking up the street, honestly, 3 weeks ago, and a bloke said, "Hey, Miracle, what happened in that 1982 Melbourne Cup?" And I said,
"Here you are going now, mate. Is it going too early?"
Mate, get over it. It's over 30 years ago. You've got to get over it. Look, if I could have that race over again, I'll guarantee he'd win. But you can't have things over again. We had a game plan that day, and everything went according to game plan except getting beat a neck. You win by a neck in our game, you're a superstar. Mm. You get better than a neck, you're a mug.
And to be fair, you rode him like you always did, didn't you?
I rode him beautiful. The only thing I did, I had the best run you've ever seen in your life. And Tommy said, when you get over the cross, and make sure you get out on him. I was following stablemate Port Carling. I didn't want to be behind him. Opportunity came for me to get out, so I got out. But because I had such a cushy run throughout the race, when I let him down, normally when I let him down, he takes a bit of time to find top gear. But because I'd had such a cushy run this day, when I let him down, he went bang. And once you go on him,
you got to go.
You just can't say, oh, I might have went a little bit too quick. You just got to pray to God you hang on. Probably, yeah. But the way I look at it, Ray, I would have given anything for that horse to have won that 82 Melbourne Cup.
What did TJ say after the race?
Tommy thought he'd won. He started running down the stairs and thought he'd won. Tommy, we were staying at the Southern Cross, and he called me up to his room that night, and I was devoed anyway. And he said, "Racing's a funny business." I said, "Yeah, it is, boss." He said, "You get beat, you win some, you lose some." He said, "Don't let it kill you." And it was great, you know.
So he'd moved on already.
Yeah, he'd sort of, let's worry about what's happening on Saturday now. And he was great like that, you know. And I'll always be remembered for the jockey who rode Kingston Town. Not for the different things you do in the game and the winners you ride and the premierships you win, but I'll always be remembered. In 100 years' time, when a few blokes are sitting around in a pub talking about the best horse of all times, Kingston Town's name will come up, and my name will come up as his jockey.
From all of us at Sky Racing, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2017. Boxing Day, the end of year celebrations continue at Randwick with the Group 3 Summer Cup. An impressive field of stayers are ready to battle it out in one of the last big races of the year. Plus, there's a $25,000 Big Six jackpot for New South Wales TAB customers at Royal Randwick on Boxing Day. The Summer Cup, Boxing Day from midday on Sky Thoroughbred Central.
And there is more. Now, this horse is having its first go on a firm track. I just thought from the wide gate, if they wanted to jump, try and come across, settle on the speed or just near the speed, I don't mind number 10, And There Is More. Number 5, Common Purpose. So it'll run really well on debut. The Magic wasn't too bad there at the Beaumont the other day. She's certainly up to a race like this.
We're finding you more winners each week with Formline Extra. Weekdays, immediately after race day.
We'll be right back. we're going to stay on the track or just go?
You just go wherever you want to, John.
Well, Ronnie.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope he watches this. You know.
He better.
We had Larry Pickering and I had a great few years flying around.
Mm.
We used to get second-hand horses. And Larry was ahead of his time. He had a training track as second only to Colin Hayes.
That's right. Mm.
And he had computerised timing, sectionals. He had horses, Rising Fear, that came second to the Melbourne Cup.
Terrific.
He used to work himself. Then he used to swim one or two laps. You could put kids on him. He'd walk them around and bring the kids back to you. He was an amazing horse. But Larry Pickering had the best sprinter he'd ever had, a horse called Comics.
Mm-hmm.
He hated being Comics because cartoonist he was.
Yep.
He hated art. Mm. Hated artists. He was very anti that arty world.
Yeah.
He had a few phobias today, Larry.
Where is Larry these days?
He's on the Gold Coast. He'd be rorting someone on the golf course today and card table tonight.
Yeah, so he's enjoying life.
Yeah, and he's got Pickering Post if you want to subscribe.
Yep.
It's he's under federal police protection at the moment for his
dare I ask?
Well, mate, there's a bit of terrorist talk going around at the moment.
Mm.
And his attitude towards it has inflamed a few opinions he wouldn't accept the federal police protection, so he's got the ultimate disguise. Took his hat off.
No one knows him.
No one knows him. If he stopped rolling his own. Anyway, this horse, we thought we were going to have a real big plunge. No one's heard of it. It's only trialled at where Johnny Duggan was the house jockey at the time, living at Larry's place.
Yeah.
And Kalnura, beautiful. If you mowed it tomorrow, it would be better than, and again, good as David's new joint, as good as Lindsay Park. And we thought, these times can't be true. I forget the breeding of the horse and who cares, but we thought we'd better sneak it down and we'll have a secret trial with a silver fox, Mal Barnes.
Yep.
And we put, Mal had this good sprinter and little naive Ronnie Duffy, little stupid us, put Ronnie on, and sure enough this horse flogged
Mal's good horse.
So we take it up to Gosford. We're going to back it for millions or whatever.
Yeah,
everything's millions, that stuff. We talked millions, it's all Disney dollars. And the only way I could get beat was to miss the start. And we went up there, we thought it'd be 100 to 1, because Larry always prepared his horse with mud and dirt, never brushed
him. Didn't look good, yeah.
Made him look as bad as possible. And it was open to 6 to 4, quickly 6 to 4 on. So we backed it anyway, because we're going to all this trouble. Instead of making millions, we're going to make 100,000. Still enough to buy a drink.
You'd be happy.
And we used to fly home. You could have a few drinks then, because no RBT up there. And the only way to get beat was miss the start. Well, Ronnie missed the start, all right. And I got beat by that much.
What,
now, I'm not saying Ronnie missed the start. I'm really not.
I'm
saying that the word of mouth of that secret in the dark trial.
It got out.
It got out big time. The jockey was Ronnie. Well, ask Ronnie next
we'll
time you get him on.
I'll hold him to account.
I just didn't think that it was right that she should be running where there's any doubt at all.
Mm.
But it was reported to the stewards that they decide. And I just think she meant more to me. I mean, Gay has 100, 200 horses. And that's not same with Bart's or Bart.
I know where you're coming from. You bred her.
To me,
you have
she was everything.
Yep.
I had owned a mum and dad. And I still do. And I thought, let's quit. And all that I asked Duncan to say to, because while I distracted Gay, was just tell Nash if he doesn't feel at 100% right, please don't start this horse. And the information I'd been given from an impeccable, would always been right, proved to be right. And Gay, I mean, I love Gay, and our friendship has been well documented. But the shoulder charge she gave me, which was never been reported on, but that should have got a yellow card. You know?
Yeah, or red card.
And the fact I helped her to make sure she was all right.
Yeah.
But it would have just been passed. We've had worse arguments. I would have said, see, we shouldn't have. And that would have been the end of that.
Mm.
And I was getting ready for a fun thing with Yuri. So it was forgotten as far as I was concerned. It was over, it was done. But it was picked up on the overhead mic, including bad language, which
became very public here. Yeah.
It became very public, and gee, mate, those stewards, that's why I'm so horrified by this. It's a stewards' inquiry. At the end of it, they wouldn't know whether I pleaded guilty to the charge of bad for the image of racing.
Mm.
Well, I could hardly argue it was good for the image of racing, because I thought I'll keep these clippings out, so when they have this big inquiry, I'll remind myself, because you do get so many, you forget.
Yeah.
Well, there was, every paper was 23 pages of stuff. And everyone had a different version, so I had to throw them away and rely on them. I just pleaded guilty as quick as I could. You got 2 days to appeal, won't be appealing, paid the fine. Gay appealed, and anyway, then the money was given to charity. So it's not on my record, but gee, when I plead guilty, I'd just get out of racing rather than go with one of those stewards in glory.
Yeah.
They're horrible.
We always went into a race thinking we were going to beat her. That's what we always do. You've got to go into a race being confident. But alas, we could never beat her. Look, he had issues that I don't think any other racehorse probably would have got to the track and raced competitively. And John was the perfect fit for that horse. He never overtaxed the horse, made him get to the races. I don't think the horse ever got to the racetrack 100% right.
Always had hoof problems and stuff, didn't he?
He was never unsound structurally, but his feet were just non-existent. And John would get him to the races ready to race. If he was with a mainstream, a big stable, they would have wanted to get him there 100% right, and he probably wouldn't have got through his training regime to get to the track. And that's why I think we never really saw the best of Haylist. I mean, he used to drop like 15, 16 kilos a race. Put so much into it. And because John couldn't put the work into him to get him that right for the race. But he was a fantastic horse.
That TJ Smith Stakes we just watched then, when Black Caviar, I think probably one of the few times in her career, really had to dig deep, because you were low flying up front. You had her off the bit.
Yeah, you know when you ride good horses all your life and you ask one to let go and they quicken and they just drop their behinds and they launch with you and you think, well, this is just home. And that's exactly what I thought. I went through the 200 metre mark and I could sense Black Caviar just coming at me, and I could hear the crowd.
The crowd was amazing that day.
It was amazing. Normally as a jockey, you never hear the crowd.
Yeah.
But I could hear it building up into a crescendo.
And you knew it was her.
And she went past me like I was tied to the fence.
Mm.
It was amazing. And we were lengths clear of the rest. Mm. But she was a true champion, and so was he.
Another of your children, Whitney's, also showed amazing resilience to overcome an unspeakable tragedy in her life. Mm. She lost her husband of just 3 months, Nathan Berry. She's rebuilt her life now and she's in a happy place, and that must make you proud how she's come out of that, what would have been a pretty dark period for you and the family, and particularly Whitney.
Yeah, of course. It's you see your children get married and start to live their life, and you know, you're happy for them, and then tragedy strikes. It was a difficult time for all of us, but none more so than Whitney and of course the family. So the Berry family, of course, they also lost their son. So, it took a long time for that to sort of, pass. Whitney's obviously picked herself up, and she's got a thriving business. That she's a dance teacher, and I'm sure her work.
Give it a plug, Glenn.
Yeah, her work, her Whitney Schofield Dance Academy, kept her busy through the dark times. And
those kids gave a lot of good messages on Facebook and social media.
And her family of mothers and whatever from that studio were fantastic. The support she got from that was great. So she's in a good place right now.
There's a positive colour, there's a positive spirit around the ground.
This is the kind of event that can really bring a club together.
My auntie was actually assisted by one of the breast care nurses with the McGrath Foundation, so any help, no matter how small or how big it is, it's very important.
It's got a crack. It's great fun. You know, you get to wear some funky stuff and do some fundraising, hopefully.
It's a great way to bring the community together and support a great cause.
Sydney Classic is firmly in the spotlight. 600 precocious yearlings across 3 days. In 2016, English Classic has produced 19 individual stakes winners, including 5 at Group 1 level. Headline graduates include the Blue Diamond winning colt Extreme Choice and dual Group 1 winning fairy tale filly Yankee Rose.
But Yankee Rose takes out the English sire.
English Classic, February 11 to 13 at Newmarket, Sydney. Catalogue at english.com.au.
Boxing Day, the end of year celebrations continue at Randwick with the Group 3 Summer Cup. An impressive field of stayers are ready to battle it out in one of the last big races of the year. Plus, there's a $25,000 Big Six jackpot for New South Wales TAB customers at Royal Randwick on Boxing Day. The Summer Cup. Boxing Day from midday on Sky Thoroughbred Central.
The winners keep coming.
I'm with Moa here. I'm taking you on with the stable mate. He's won two of his last three. He's fit, he's racing well, and he's winning. So that'll do me. I'm with Iggy Pop here. He just had no luck there last start. He's done a lot of work in the run from that tricky gate. He's drawn much softer. I know he carries the same weight here, but he'll be better for the run, and he is a winner at Randwick over the 2,400 metres. Just needs kiss him for a second. The extra distance does look ideal.
Formline Summer, 7:30 Thursday.
Bjorn, I remember in the summer of 2011, you've been in Sydney 5 years, and it was a Rosehill meeting on a Saturday, and I walked past you and I said, how are things going? And you said you're desperate to train a winner. Can you recall that period?
I think my first two runners in Sydney and Newcastle, they were at Newcastle, not in Sydney. And the first one was a field, I think 100 metres last. And I was thinking the last one can't go that good. They're both in the market, they're both chances. And I think she ran 200 metres last. So
it's a rude awakening.
Yeah, it was pretty tough driving home that day. So it's funny, and you have to get up and fight the next morning. I remember one guy was driving home, and Hugh Bowman phoned up. He said, you'll be right, just keep attacking. And it's funny how it's sort of, you keep going and keep pushing and keep driving, and eventually it's sort of, if you work hard enough and you have a bit of luck, something will go your way.
But you did risk everything, didn't you? You had a young family, you had a cosy job, a lovely home in Cambridge, a training partnership with New Zealand's best trainer. You risked everything to come over.
Yeah, I probably did. It's madness now.
Looking back.
And, you know, Andrea, we had a lovely house in Cambridge, a 100-year-old villa with a lovely block of land and nice trees, and Cambridge is a lovely town. And, yeah, when you sort of look back, I think, geez, that is madness.
Were you doubting yourself for a while there?
Yeah, of course you do. And it's quite, even though New Zealand and Australia, there's a lot of similarities, there's also a heck of a lot of differences. And it takes a fair bit of while to get your head around in terms of placing horses and even the training styles between Sydney and New Zealand are quite different. And what may work in New Zealand may not work here, and vice versa. So a lot of that's just trial and error, and what works and what doesn't. And definitely a lot of thought's gone in, as much as a lot of hard work, into trying to, you know, educate horses and set them up to be competitive in Sydney. And it is tough here.
When you made that decision to leave the partnership with Murray, is it right that Murray said, well, you're on your own now?
He did, and at the time I was quite put out.
It's because daunting, your father to say.
And I'd been there for sort of 5 years and worked hard, and I thought I had some sort of input in terms of the success that was happening. As it was the best thing he ever did, because it meant that I had to come over here and, as he says, kill your own. So I had to be aggressive, try and get clients, and try and set up a business with not too much foundation. So over the past 4 or 5 years, I've learned more than I ever thought I would. And at the same time, we have just about a completely separate client base, except maybe for one or two clients. One of them, Scott Richardson, he's been a great client to me.
Gay Waterhouse made an approach to you before you'd even turned 20 to come and ride for her in Sydney, and I know you're a Melbourne boy and Victorian born and bred. How difficult was that to, one, leave home, but also to take up such a high profile role in Sydney racing?
Look, it was a very difficult decision, especially to leave Victoria, where I was going very well. As you say, I won the Scobie Breasley medal, and I was, you know, up there with one of the leading jockeys in Victoria at the time. And I was riding for the Hawks team in Melbourne. But when you get an opportunity from Gay Waterhouse, you've got to seriously consider it. And, you know, I laid all the cards on the table and felt that it was the best decision for myself. And I came to Sydney and packed my bags and made the move myself. And, you know, I felt it was a good decision. And Gay's a great mentor, a great lady, and had a very enjoyable time riding for her, and still do now.
your first full season in Sydney, you won the Jockeys Premiership, so you can look back on it now and think it was the right move, but it also, I think, helped your development as a jockey, didn't it? Because all of a sudden you're exposed to different riders, different pressures, different trainers. It just helps you evolve as a jockey.
Yeah, I think so. And you know what? I think in life, if you make decisions like that and go and explore different parts of, say, riding in Australia and meeting new people and riding for different trainers, are only going to help you. And that experience meeting Gay and her owners, and she gets you to do different things, it only helps you. And you know, like you said, I won the premiership and rode numerous Group 1s. I got to ride a champion 2 year old in Sebring 4, and that was an incredible ride. And I can't be any more thankful for the experience that I was given.
We're in 2008, Blake, and that was also the year when you won the Melbourne Cup on Viewed. You'll go down as in history now as the last jockey to win a Melbourne Cup for the great Bart Cummings. It was his 12th and final cup. That must have been every jockey's dream, obviously, but what a moment for you.
It was a great moment, and you know, I still have to pinch myself to this day to win the Melbourne Cup for the master, Bart Cummings, and you know, a racing icon. And
that was the closest finish in Cup history, wasn't it? And you've probably been asked this many times. As you crossed the line on Viewed, Bowers on your outside, Corey Brown, what did you say to each other?
Look, we didn't say a great deal. It was just a matter of, you know, we asked each other who won, but and we both didn't know who won.
Okay.
But you know, it was a thrilling finish and a great race, and you know, thankfully my horse got the bob in. But you had to feel for the connections of the second horse, and but like I said, to win a race and to even get a ride in at the Melbourne Cup for the legend of Bart Cummings was something very special, and words can't describe that feeling.
I always admired you during that 2010 period when you had to front up to those stewards' inquiries over the placing of bets. You didn't shirk away from it. You phoned up every time, and you copped your medicine. That was a tough period, though, for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a tough period. I think it was not only tough on me, but tough on my family, especially, you know, for my mum and my stepdad, and you know, all the people close to me that you know, really had supported me to where I'd got to and what I had achieved to up to that point. And to be hit with a big bombshell like that, it really takes you back. And you know, you've got to really reflect on your life and where you want to go. And you know, I had to analyse things and seek some professional help to get my life back.
You had some dark days, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, mm-hmm. No doubt I did. And suffered some depression for, geez, quite a long time. And through the help of a lot of people, we got myself back on track. And
what did you do in that year you were out?
Oh, look, I had to I had to obviously cure my problem, and you know, like I said, reflect on really where I wanted my life to go and what I wanted to achieve as a person, and where I saw myself heading. And I wanted to be, you know, wanted to be a great jockey, and I wanted to be a good person. And you know, I gave up betting and really worked hard on curing that problem and trying to get back to the level of jockey that I knew I could be. And it was hard road, and we had to start from the bottom. And it was a tough journey, but thankfully we've passed it on now.
International Animal Health is a market innovator and manufacturer of quality animal health products, offering a range of solutions for large animals and the intensive industries. Partnering with our clients, we have a shared goal to improve the overall growth, health and performance of your animals. Our pioneering product research, local manufacturing and distribution place us at the forefront of Australian companies to support the livestock industries, both nationally and increasingly to overseas export markets.
Winx has moved up now. Hartnell's hit the front. Winx is going with him, and they've turned it on. Winx has raced away around the home turn. This is a blitz. It's a Winx. It's Global Glamour Whistle.
The winners keep coming from Sky Racing Tipsters. Mark Guest.
The 150. Young Amazon led the way, but here's Our Rocky unleashing on the outside. It's Our Rocky. Metazoa's getting through and flashing home was Ruthless Angel. It might beat them all. Parry now gets removal at 10. It found the front and put two lengths on them. Mr. Bad of Country tries to run on. It's removal, though, clear. Mr. Bad of Country trying hard. Is closing late, but removal will deliver.
Sky Racing Tipsters. Finding winners on race day.
Boxing Day, the end of year celebrations continue at Randwick with the Group 3 Summer Cup. An impressive field of stayers are ready to battle it out in one of the last big races of the year. Plus, there's a $25,000 Big Six jackpot for New South Wales TAB customers at Royal Randwick on Boxing Day. The Summer Cup, Boxing Day from midday on Sky Thoroughbred Central.
You saw Sam when he was just 15. What did you see in him that you thought this young boy can make a jockey?
We were running a little bit of a school out at Warwick Farm at the time, there were some kids going through, and I just noticed straight away that he had beautiful balance on a horse, and lovely balance, and he just loved riding. Mm. But the balance was the thing, and I do keep still saying to him, just remember one of your best gifts is your balance, and don't try and make the horse go quicker than it can go.
Can you teach that, or was that an innate thing with a young person?
I think you can teach it if you keep at it.
Yep.
And but that's what I always said to him, your balance is one of your best gifts.
You were brought up in the Theo Green School of Apprentices. Do you apply his principles when you're teaching young apprentices like Sam Clippen and Hugh Bowman in years gone by?
No doubt about it. I probably drive them mad relating back to what the old boss said, you know. And it's not too far off the mark, I can tell you that. You know, he was a great master, Theo, and a great person, you know. And he wasn't. There was nothing fancy about him. It was just all good, decent, principle stuff, and your integrity had to be spot on.
I think of people like Malcolm Johnson and Darren Beeman, yourself, who came through the Theo Green School, so to speak, and you, all of you, still refer to him as the boss.
Exactly right. Yeah. So you can imagine the job he had with Malcolm, can't you?
It would have been impossible, wouldn't it? I think of Hugh Bowman, an apprentice jockey, was an extreme talent, and he was always going to be a very, very good jockey, but he's now recognised as one of the world's best, and arguably some would say the world's best. Did you think he'd rise to those heights when he came to you as a teenager?
Well, the thing that's always stuck in my mind with Hughie was, after work every afternoon, he'd come into the office and sit down at his desk and wanted to talk about racing. Mm. He was passionate about the game. And he just wanted to keep getting better and better. And he's got a terrific attitude. He's, you know, maybe sometimes he could be a little bit too much laid back, maybe. Mm. He's laid back on a couple of mine a couple of times. but no, he...
Did you give him a spray afterwards?
I did.
I bet you copped that pretty well.
Exactly. No, I did. Yeah, as you say, the ratings of jockeys throughout the world now, recently was just rated as the top one.
You've had to wage wars on a lot of different fronts since you joined Racing New South Wales in 2004. It's often said about you prefer a fight than a feed, so where does that fight come from?
Look, I don't prefer a fight than a feed. I like a feed, actually. But, sometimes you have to put the armour on and go in and battle. And, I mean, unfortunately, there's been some challenges in racing which you needed to battle. And I gave it my best. And fortunately, we've won most of the battles. But I'm always expecting the one to lose, so I'm not looking forward to that.
Probably the biggest challenge, I dare say, of professional career was the race fields legislation, which you identified early on as being a major issue for the board at Racing New South Wales, and that must have tested your resolve.
Oh, look, I think that was probably the greatest test of all. The first thing I did when I started at Racing New South Wales was seek a legal opinion as to how we could enforce copyright. About 2 or 3 months later, Robert Nason started at Racing Victoria, and he was a great man, and we both, you know, said, really thought that, you know, there was a massive challenge between these new wagering operators. So, you know, we got a 200-page opinion, well, I did at the time, and, you know, that was to enforce copyright. But it had its challenges. We thought at the time that, you know, that we'd really be taken on legally, so it was thought a better option to have race-field legislation. So little did I know we'd be taken on with that, and you know, and that took 3 years to go through the courts all the way to the High Court. So I felt like the guy from the castle sitting in that High Court. But we won, and I think the big victory for that is all of racing, all, not just in New South Wales, but all of Australia. And in the future, it'll also be sport. I mean, you know, everyone can earn money out of people that are using their products for wagering purposes.
But when you started this fight, there had been a couple of legal cases overseas which had gone against racing's establishment, and a lot of people were telling you you're chasing the wrong horse, so to speak, here, and you were under a lot of pressure to, I guess, abandon the whole case and form some sort of a negotiate a deal with the corporate bookmakers. You stood firm, though.
Look, I had to stand firm for one reason. The cases that you mentioned overseas had different variations to us. And Race for Legislation was, you know, New South Wales legislation. They took us on under the constitutional law. But the thing that I needed was certainty. I needed certainty that we could charge for our product. Mm. By negotiating a settlement with them, you were never going to get, you know, we had numerous offers of settlement. Couldn't take them, I believe we couldn't take them, because it wouldn't give you the certainty you required.
Were you under pressure, though, from the board to take them?
Look, no, the board of Racing New South Wales was unbelievably supportive.
Because there were sectors, industry, which were imploring you to not to go all the way through the courts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there was a vote of no confidence at one point in time at the way we were handling the case by the Trainers Association.
Yeah.
You know, we were proven right because it gave us the certainty we needed. And we now, you know, we can charge whatever we wish for our product. People can accept it or they can't accept it, but at least we have a High Court decision to back up whatever we wish to do.
I admire your resolve through that period, because I do know that it took a personal toll on you, and you must have felt like, why are you doing this?
Look, there was a
It got very personal.
It got very personal, and I never treated the wagering operators personally, but unfortunately a couple of them decided to launch a pretty savage social media campaign against me. I mean, I used to read it and used to hate myself. That's how bad it was. And
what did Philippa say during all this?
Look, she supported me 100%. And I always knew that I was going to win. I always knew that if you're doing the right thing for the right reasons, you win. And I kept saying to you at the time, Ray, because you kept saying, mate, geez, you know, how are you going to do this? The good guys always win in the end. And, you know, I'm not saying that the wage numbers are bad guys, but, you know, I knew we were doing the right thing for the industry and the right thing for racing.
Well, as you said, the case went all the way to the High Court, and you were vindicated. Racing New South Wales' position was vindicated, and subsequently other racing jurisdictions have basically mirrored your race for legislation case. That night, after the judgment came down in the High Court, how did you celebrate?
Look, I'm not one that really celebrates, to be quite honest, and just had a normal night at home with my wife.
You drove back home?
Yeah, drove home. Look, I think that, to me, is when Pete Sweeney, our legal counsel, came in and said you won 7-0 in the High Court. I think the relief that I had, I think I've only ever had that sort of relief once before in my life, and that's when I got my final university exams, because I wasn't the greatest of students, you know, I probably wouldn't attend university very much. And I can remember the relief I had when I got those uni results. Well, it was a similar feeling once we got the High Court case, that we'd won, you know, and it was over, that this 3-4 year battle was finally over. You know, I could go home and sleep normal, like a normal person.
From all of us at Sky Racing, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a prosperous 2017.
And there is more. Now, this horse is having its first go on a firm track. I just thought from the wide gate, if they wanted to jump, try and come across, settle on the speed or just near the speed, I don't mind number 10, And There Is More. Number 5, Common Purpose. So it'll run really well on debut. The Magic wasn't too bad there at the Beaumont the other day. She's